Well, I was going to ask you about the story on this Minnie Mae. Winnie Mae here.
Where did that airplane came in? Wiley Post. That's when he was flying around the world.
Oh, was that? That of course, that's Wiley Post airplane, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I knew the name was familiar. I couldn't think of it.
I forget what year that is, too.
You had it written down here, huh?
Well, that was, doesn't matter. It was when they came through, 34, I think. About 35. Mm-hmm. So did you meet the famous comedian and...
No, I didn't.
But it was a small town there. Everybody saw everybody that came to town.
How did you happen to have the picture?
Oh, we took a picture.
You saw it? Was the airplane just parked out there?
Yeah,
it was parked there in what is known as Weeks Field.
I see.
Refueling,
the,
I suppose.
Oh, bowling alley there. That used to be Pan American hangar.
Now, over here, this Russian airplane, you said this was about the time that Eielson was killed.
It was shortly after that. I don't know just how long. It was shortly after that. They come this far and turn back from here.
The Russian airplane did?
Yeah.
They were looking for one of their down.
They were looking for the one that was down, and they never did find him, the way I understand it.
I see.
So you see, they dress very much the same.
Yeah, conventional European dress. There's another thing over here. That was 46, some 20-some years later, but John Knight.
Yeah. He used to take care of the trading post for me there. He was an old German man and prospect and trapped there for years and lived right there close by. And so when I'd leave there, I'd turn the trading post over to him to take care of it and trade what fur comes in and so forth. So I didn't have to stay there all the time. I just went in and out of there.
First trip of the Winnie Mae, FC Hall.
Yeah, around the world,
FC
Hall sponsor.
Time,
what's the most hazardous experience? What's the closest call you ever had?
Riding in an airplane. I think there's a story of it there someplace.
Low and ragged plane crash?
Yeah.
And your Valiant Ospreys?
Yeah, that's it.
Well, you came so close so many times in an airplane that it really doesn't.
The plane iced up and suddenly nosedived into a clump of trees?
That's right. We were up in a clump of trees about 15 feet. It just stopped right there.
One tree came right up.
Come out and scratch me along the back. Big birch tree like this. Broke the top of it off, and well, that's what stopped the plane, that green birch, and it come right through the plane, this small plane, and all these here little aspens and birch, they come right up through there so thick, and neither one of us got a scratch on us.
What a man.
I jumped out, well, the door flew open. I jumped out, and I had a hard time getting the slim brag out. He just turned white. And I thought the darn thing would get a fire, you see. And I kept after him, and finally, he did crawl down very slowly. That time, Mrs. Brennan come running over. She seen what had happened. She come up running over with the fire extinguisher. And the same time, as she come running over, Lon Brennan was on the end of the field getting ready to take off for Fairbanks with his plane. So I said, "That's your husband down there?" She said, "Yeah." And I run out and got in the field and I flagged him down. We got right in that plane, come on into Fairbanks.
Boy, those close calls.
Yeah.
You could be here the rest of the night. Listen to those close calls that
we had. Yeah, I had a lot of done an awful lot of flying. When I was with the fire control, and I traveled as a fur buyer at different times.
You did?
All up and down the Yukon, over in the Kuskokwim country, and all over the interior of Alaska.
Now, you said you had learned the fur trade from John Hadjovich.
I did this, that's right.
Now, when you say you learned the fur trade,
the primary thing there was to learn a good skin from a bum one. And that was the principal thing. You know, a good fur when you bought it, the value of it, and so forth. There's a lot to know about fur. You right down to the fine point of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, buying from the native, a fox is a fox. Don't make any difference whether he's good or bad. So you just pay him one price for it, that's all.
And it would average out.
Yeah. And if you bought a bum one, the bum one that had offset the good one.
I see.
Yeah.
By the way, Morris.
A good one that offset the bum one.
See, Morris Smith.
So, it it was quite, I really liked it, it was quite interesting. And then during the time I worked for the fire control, I had 30 days leave coming every year. I'd take it and go fur buying in the wintertime.
Ingeborg wrote that.
Oh, that's a nice story by 1971. I see. In the Seattle paper, this ran.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no wonder I didn't read it.
Seattle Times. I hope it was.
Tell me something about these, about your work with the marshal's office.
Well, that was very interesting too. We've done a lot of traveling throughout the 4th Judicial Division, and they're all over the village.
What did you do?
Well, primarily we had to enforce all the territorial laws. At that time, which what the state police has now. You see, there was no state police or no other police outside of the city. And then the marshals had to enforce all the laws in the territory. Well, it'd be just like this if I was driving along South Cushing and I seen a drunk, I was supposed to pick him up and throw him in jail.
We usually look the other way.
But a lot of times we let him keep going, so he's going home.
Mm-hmm. Just warning.
Now, you covered the 4th Judicial Division.
Yes.
Which includes what? Your range from the Alaska border?
Well, it'd be north of the Alaska Range, mountain range here. It'd be this side. Except in Nome, that was
first
division Nome. And it covered all the country from here to the border. And
Anchorage was the third, I think. Third division, the 4th division.
On up north.
I think second. Nome is in the second.
Second.
Yeah,
first,
yeah. That's right.
You're right.
That
would make sense.
So you didn't take in the Nome country?
No.
No.
Except on special.
But McGrath, our work was
transportation of prisoners to in and out of Alaska. But oftentimes take a half dozen out and they would bring back two or three or something like that. Witnesses on trials and so forth. And then we had a lot of court duty. And it was, but I could see. Towards the last there, well, when the state had come in, I know what was going to happen, so I made preparations of getting out of it.
'51 to '59, and of course we became a state in '58.
'59,
yeah, that's right. And so you saw that the division of
Department of Justice
would come in.
It was
well,
being attrition. No, he was working for the Department of Justice, mm-hmm. but the state would come in. And see mm-hmm. the,
mm-hmm. I probably could have went over with the state, but
well, you were offered a job. Well,
I wanted to get out of law enforcement on account of my age, for one thing. And
1960, he went to work for the city.
Mm-hmm. I had more interesting things to do. Chasing drunks for
him. Yeah.
He was a court bailiff for 1 year with the city of Fairbanks. It was a state employment, but the city took on the job of the administrative work and paid for the issue of checks. And then he supervised at a state jail for 2 years.
Oh, here's something. With his fire control, you were a ranger.
Yeah, he was district forester. They call him a district ranger.
I see.
For this district.
Now, what did you do with fire control?
Well, it was the prevention of fires. At that time, they didn't have the money to fight fires with. Worked on an appropriation. And it was more of an educational program that we were working on. Although, after a few years, we did start getting some money in to fight fires with. And then one time I had 40 fire guards scattered all over the country. Eagle and Fort Yukon and Ruby and... They were all in my jurisdiction, and then we had road patrols, and the only fires that we could take care of would be the roadside fires and stuff like that, or out in the village, before I got started on the village. They would get all the natives out, and but I had limited funds to fight these fires. So when our funds would run out at the end of the fiscal year, which would be right now, in the middle of the fire season, the fires would be burned all over and we couldn't do nothing. We didn't have any money to do it with. We wouldn't find out what our appropriation was until maybe a month afterwards, and we couldn't obligate any funds. So we just sat down and watched the fire burn.
And then they start an emergency.
And then the emergency fire fund come in. That was in 46, I guess, that was the year I left.
This was told about Roy Smith quitting the fire control and being succeeded by the general. I see, you replaced Roy Smith. Oh. And then a little later on, when Roy Smith, he was doing something he didn't like. What was it, with Jessens or something? I don't know. Anyway, then he worked over here. He was a guard over at Central for a summer.
So you patrolled the highway, and then you had men out in the villages too.
Yeah. I fortunately found we'd have one fire guard, and if he had a fire within range of the village, there where he could fire all the natives. And because I had one at Eagle. Oh, I had one at Northwood, and one at Ten Across, one at Big Delta, and one at Ruby and Galena.
What would they do?
They would, their primary purpose was to educate the natives from starting fires. They were the biggest fire setters in the country, the natives. They didn't realize what damage they were doing. They would, just start fire. Then sometimes it would be a run of caribou come through the country. They would start a fire to let the Indians know 10 miles away that there was some caribou running there, make a big smoke, you know. Go and get the caribou and hell with the fire.
And sometimes they burn deliberately to make moose pasture.
Yeah.
Well, as a matter of fact, this was, in a sense, it was control of the environment. In their own way. Well, as a matter of fact, there's some debate, some truth about the virtues of that.
It's questionable.
They spent millions of dollars on fires here. Well, you can see right here that all this country has been burned off here, you know, one time.
That's why there's so much birch now.
Yeah, birch
but the Indians set fire to the forests deliberately at times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
To burn it up, to bring up the birch.
That's right.
For the moose.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've seen them during my trading days, you know, around the edge of the lake. They hunt muskrats in the spring of the year. Around the edge of the lake, there'd be grass. These muskrats would get in the grass, so they'd set the grass afire. They'd get the muskrats out in the open water to shoot them. And then leave the fire go. They'd get into an old burnt stump or old tree and burn and all that. Well, I finally got them straightened out on that after a few years.
Ted, I'm really interested in something here. Now, you had a sawmill, but for the most part, Alaskan timber is really not a harvestable lumber.
Is it?
Do we need to preserve that? We do. It's better to have the spruce than to have the birch going up.
Well, either one, both.
I know we need our forest. They're not. And I have an old bird in them on the site. It takes a long time for it.
Well, nothing that's a. The only thing that I could say that a fire does good is to make willows
for the most people.
Right? Willows grow back up and down. But you kill off everything else. You kill off all your
vegetation.
You kill off all your
water.
Burn the thunder off and you have nothing there to hold water for the pigs and whatnot. And so, fire is damaging.
Don't make a lot of noise up.
Down
in the flats or on the
hillside or.
Where?
I understand
that. That's fair enough.
North London.
You're on fair London. Fire at all. They're letting it burn off. Some of that
stuff
say
is no good. But the dark timber along the street.
They're directing themselves. Yeah.
They got about 2,500 acres.
Fire, I don't know.
Well, so it was largely an education program to stop the Indians for
saying that. That was our
plan. But you did
also fight fire and
have a fire. Yeah, we fought.
So that's a lot of having a guard out there directing the Indians and control them.
Fire. You could rally the Indians to fight
the battle.
Yes.
Right.
See, in other words, tradition that we have today of hiring the Indians to find us. Went back a long way.
Oh, yeah. They're good for it, isn't it?
Yeah, they run better. I thought they most good.
Yeah. What do they do for mosquitoes?
Don't seem to bother them. I guess I've been living with them so long. Don't seem to bother them much.
Mary Jane faked the other day. She said, yeah, when I was a kid at Rampart, mosquitoes never got me. But she says, no, when I go back, they
do. Been around the white people.
Yeah, she says that, you know, we wondered if it was a change in night or something.
It could be something.
It used to be a ranger's town. Yeah, ranger station.
Back at center. You probably have never heard of back at center.
Down Alaska Highway, so there was a big murder in there, and they had the ranger station, which is right now there's a bunch of courts, mobile courts,
yes. Oh, yeah, there were there. Sure, I've seen the ranger station.
No, it isn't.
No, it isn't. But there's something there, isn't
this? So, yeah, there's a... That's what made into a top up there, do but they do have a beautiful
ranger station
right on the Richards.
Yeah. Well, when you put the buffalo in there, it seems to me
it's
not in the buffalo.
Well, what they did, they had a corral built for them, and they put them in this corral for a couple of weeks. And until they got the strength and whatnot, they had a lot of alfalfa. And then they
turned them off.
But
to my knowledge,
didn't bother. And there was that many
buffalo the next year.
They wintered through.
And that
the department of the
Fish and Wildlife. And
that
type of them.
Hey, care.
Stuff. I think they
and
I even took some up to the
Jarvis Creek
and started on there and
different times when I was
out there straight and whatnot. Different meadows on there.
Scattered around, you know, when there was a good storm. So they got through the winter real fine. But what happened?
After that was a
bear in the spring of the year.
Trying to get the cattle.
That was the problem.
But I don't think they ever got too many of them.
Well, it's not, for the herd did grow.
Yeah.
Well,
they've been killing them.
It was over 600 of them.
Well, okay, they multiplied to 600.
Yeah.
I didn't know that much. I knew they grew names and had a small.
After the military came.
Different story.
I'm going to use that country for the bombing.
And then there was a bunch of them got on the field there. Fort Greeley, and they licked up.
You see what I started to
scatter around the melt ice.
It's like a salt that
killed. Yeah, it killed.
Yeah.
I don't know, a couple of dozen or something.
You see how groups like that out of Buffalo Center in 1944? There weren't any
friends out there then, too.
If I have a favorite in the animal life, I think it's the fox.
They're a beautiful little animal. Yeah,
I have their
dumps out there, and you see the bears.
Oh, yeah.
Ken used to take a lot of pictures.
Are the bears at the dumps?
Yeah. Didn't pay attention to him, and I would have wanted to have gotten out of the car.
What kind of experiences did you have in your marshalling days?
Well,
besides
that, some of them I wouldn't care to mention.
Well, he got bit once.
You got bit once.
But you must.
Well, that's
you can't mention her name because she's still in trouble.
Yeah.
One of our ladies of the night.
There's a story in there about that too.
Is it in here?
I think it's in there.
She's a proper lady today.
Well, I wouldn't know. Possibly.
Yeah.
Should be in here. Though. Most of the black. I don't know why he got his name in the paper so much he didn't have.
Well,
There wasn't too much news around Fairbanks at the time, and there was quite a few reporters around.
Go deeper. Did you know Bill Wallace by any chance? Bill and Helen Wallace? He worked for the fire control for a while, and he started what they call a fog nozzle.
Oh, I see. He's one of the reporter people. See, these are interesting. I'll bet there's nobody that has no... there are none of these on fire on the file that I've ever seen. Alaskan Fire Control Service Quarterly, and this is July 28th. It's a typewritten mimeograph sheet, volume 1, number 6. What do we have here, 6 to 8 pages?
You're asking about the marshal's office. That's probably one of the things that took place. That's gambling.
Yeah, how about gambling? Now, that was, you were dealing with arresting people for infraction of the law, and what sort of law problems were, besides liquor? And,
primarily, the only, we weren't out looking for them. The only time that we would go is when there was a complaint entered into the district attorney's office. And we had to, whether we liked it or not. But occasionally we wouldn't go on our own. Just stir up a little trouble.
Now, Sam White, when he was the flying game warden, he said he was out looking for the aliens.
There was a lot of them at that time. At that time they weren't allowed to have a gun in their possession. I think they learned to have it now. At that time they couldn't. And there were quite a lot of aliens here at that time.
Non-citizens,
in other words. Yeah, all Canadians and Slavonians and all walks of life.
Controversy still hot.
This is interesting that in 1953 was an editorial, if Alaska were a state, we could legalize gambling. And boy, it still comes up, doesn't it? That's really a problem with that. But gambling, I see punch board issues, and Marshal McRoberts is determined to rid the city of punch boards.
Yeah, I was in on that too.
So what did you do about that?
Well, they just rid it all, everybody of punch boards, and that was it. They didn't come back. They were outlawed.
Here we are. A woman convicted of biting the arm of the law.
Oh, that's well, now you know her name, but don't mention it.
Victim was Ted Lowell. Lowell and another deputy, this is February 1953. Lowell and another deputy, Robert Thompson, went to the accused's house to serve a warrant for speeding. And was she on the line down on 4th Avenue?
Yeah, well, she was scattered all over town.
At that time, they were all scattered. When did the line come down? I thought that came down after, or just before statehood.
No, it was quite a while before then.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, quite a while.
Clad only in a bathrobe and a pair of boots. Ha-ha, she became obstreperous, and while attempting to handcuff her, she bit Lowell on the right forearm. However, you were wearing a downtown parkie and a jacket under that, so it probably wasn't too deep a bite. How was
she bit me right here.
Did she really get the
Well, you know, surprising enough, and I didn't hardly believe it. I had on heavy underwear. It was cold. It was about 30 below. I had a heavy underwear on. I had a wool shirt on. I had one of these here down jackets on. And she bit right through the whole thing.
She didn't.
And I didn't realize it until I got her into jail and I thought there's something wrong. So I started rolling up my sleeve, and here was her teeth mark right there. So I went up and showed it to the district attorney, and I forward and showed it to the FBI, and down to showed it to the commissioner, and you know, there was evidence right there.
You know, to this day, she treats friends. Ted like their buddy-buddy.
I'll bet that's true.
There's no ill feeling.
I don't know the person's
finances. Well, she's quite a flashy-looking Negro.
Oh!
Dark, about half and half, I'd say. Real good-looking gal. And she came up one day, I can't remember now what her complaint was, but she was old. They were selling some property downstairs. The marshal, that was another duty of the marshal's office to conduct marshal's sales, you know. The deputies usually did that. And somebody had gotten a judgment against her in an execution, and we were selling a piece of her property down there. This was years later. You know, she raised a terrific fuss, and the McRoberts brothers, Ted McRoberts had a brother, Mike McRoberts, was working as a deputy too, and they had a terrible time getting her up the office, put her in jail, and here she was waiting in the marshal's private office for the next, see what was going to happen next, and I happened to go in to talk to her, kind of keep an eye on her so she wouldn't get the notion of leaving us out. And she was dressed beautiful, and I said, oh my, I started to admire her. Oh, she said, yes, Zella dresses me. Oh boy.
Yeah, that's right. There was a shop down the corner.
Yes. Well, there's so many funny things happening in the
market. Yeah, they were funny after you get to think about them. But, you know, the wind-up of all of this was that we went into court on what was set up, you see, in the commissioner's court, and had a jury trial. Her lawyer called for a jury trial, and a great big deal. Well, everything went my way, and then they found her guilty. Well, the attorney who was warned him appealed it to the higher court, district court. And so this goes on for months, you see, and then finally went into district court, another big jury trial. By God, it all went my way, and that case too, and it cost her a pile of money, and she had to do 30 days in jail and all that stuff.
She was charged with assault and battery by law. It's a different story. It came out February 3rd, 53, probably the noon one. She maintained that the officer did the assaulting. She filed a counterclaim. Commissioner Nordale sentenced her to 30 days with 16 days suspended. Isn't that funny? What other sort of funny things do you recall having happened? I'm sure there were many of them.
Oh, yeah, there was some. Good luck. Numerous, hard to really think of it. But,
I'm sure you get to reminiscing.
Yeah, there was one case where we were picking up prostitution, you know, prostitutes. No, this was on a complaint that we were sent out there. This was way out in the south end, which wasn't in the city limits at that time. Not around 25th, 26th Street. Yeah. So there was a joint going there, and this is right around payday, GI payday, you see. So we know where this house is working. And I goes over there and stand right by the door. There was a light shining from another house, so I stand in the shadow there, and every time one of these GIs come out, I grab him and take him over to the car and then get a statement from him, you see. So the guy in the car, he was getting a statement. So here comes three GIs around the other side of the house. And they're standing over there, and by God, one of them seen me. He says, no, he can't go in. No, he says, see that guy over there? He says, he's going next. Pointing at me. He's the next one.
You're in line.
So I beat it. Them guys, they finally got in. Well, in the meantime, when they went in, well, I went back to my stand and I grabbed one by one. Well, we grabbed up four or five of them, or something like that. We got all these statements. We had to have three statements in order to make a case out of it. So we tied that one up real tight. Oh, there was
some. Oh, so yeah, I see. You had it on the, you had the goods on the girls.
Then. Yeah. And so we got the warrant out for him without an arrest. I don't know. They didn't do too much them days about it. Find him $50, $100, give him 30 or 40 days suspended, and that was it. I'll go back and go to work again.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess they serve their purpose anywhere in the world. You're always going to have them.
That's a big question, you know. Mm-hmm. Somebody, I was with a group of women, after we hung our art exhibit today, we had lunch and got to talking about this very, very thing. And whether it's better to legalize them. Oh, they had a convention. It was on television the other day. Yeah, we were saying, you know, they were demanding their rights and they wanted it legalized. And I can remember going to Kodiak not long after the line had closed there, and the women of Kodiak said, why, we never had a rape here until the line was closed.
Yeah, I heard the same stories.
Yeah, and other
true,
people say, oh, well, it just has nothing to do with it. So, but I think there are advantages to control.
Yeah.
Oh,
legal,
yeah,
legal
definitely.
Control.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you legalize it, make it under control, you can...
I believe in that.
Yeah.
Sure do.
Well, the city had it at one time.
Well, right? Down there on 4th mm-hmm. Avenue, that was controlled more or less by the city, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And that there, you never heard of any trouble down there at no time. One time we had to go down and raid the whole line.
No, why?
Well, a complaint came into the district attorney's office. Some religious fanatics and whatnot. And he had sat right there alongside the federal building, and what are you doing about it? So we had to go down there and raid it, unbeknown to the city, you see. And we really had a lot of fun that night. I'm telling you.
Married men's
and
entrance and all.
There was nothing come out of the whole thing that was raided. And
you know,
it quieted it down for a little while. It didn't get so bold, you know, and so forth. It quieted it down for a while. But
my grandfather was a real estate broker in California. He had an office in San Jose. And one of his investors, one of his clients, was a woman named Blanche Baird. And Blanche Baird loved diamonds. And Blanche had diamonds set in her teeth. Now, unfortunately, I was too young to ever have met Blanche. I guess I might have met her, but I wouldn't remember it in the 30s. But my mother has a coffee brown diamond. It's a beautiful, big, dark coffee brown diamond. Magnificent diamond. That came from this Blanche Baird. And Blanche Baird had come up to the Klondike in the gold rush days and had eventually wound up marrying a doctor. And she had money on her own, plus the doctor had money, and she acquired us these. My grandfather said he would go over, she'd call him up and say, Bill, I want to talk about some real estate, come on over, and he'd get over, and she'd be in an old ragged bathrobe with a string of diamonds hanging off of her ears and her neck. And there was a man in her life who, Pedro Alvarado was his name. And Pedro would go broke once in a while, and one day he came into my grandfather to borrow some money, and he had this big diamond stick pin. And so he put it up for collateral, and Blanche gave it to my grandfather, and he gave it to my mother. That's how it came. But she had gotten a lot of the diamonds out of the Klondike, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But she must have been a really interesting woman. And I gather that a lot of these women, they were the ladies of the night, but by golly, they had their good sides too. You know,
they did
a lot of great things, a lot of good things. Clara Rust mentioned one that they called her the Florence Nightingale of Alaska. That she went down to Nenana and nursed a bunch of people through a flu epidemic.
Yeah, they had a terrible flu epidemic before we came.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. But in your experience with these women, did you, I'm sure you must have met all kinds of
them. Oh, I sure did. But there's one other thing I have to mention, that is burning stump deal. This was a house of prostitution,
yes.
And that's all it was.
Well, sort of a bar, too, wasn't it? Or, well, of course, they served.
That was the name of the place, the
yeah,
Burning Stump.
The Burning Stump was the name of it.
Oh.
They didn't have any bar there.
No, just women.
Just women. So, well, we raided that one night. And
didn't you have eviction or condemnation or something?
After it went into the court, where they got out an abatement proceeding against the building, you see, to lock it up and post a notice on it that it's not to be used for anything, not even to live in or nothing, for 1 year. So I get this abatement proceeding to go out and put it on the house. This happens a week after, 10 days after. After we raided it, you see. So I goes out there, and there was no house. The house was gone. I looked all around there. I said, sure, I'm in the right place. So I started asking the neighbors. I said, hey, this is, wasn't there used to be a house sitting over here? Yeah. Well, I said, what happened to it? Well, somebody came in with a lowboy and moved it. The truck.
Yeah.
So I went back to the district attorney and told him about it. I said, well, he said, wherever it's at, he said, you got to find it. So I started looking around for it, but I didn't spend all my time looking for it. And this went on for about a month. And I was driving out to Richardson Highway. And I seen a building out there at 6 Mile. It looked something like it. And I turned around and went in there, and there was a carpenter working on it. And I says, told him who I was, and I says, what are you going to open up a place here? And, well, he says, one of them I'm working for is going to. And I says, what is her name? And he told me. And that's just what I wanted to know. And I didn't say anything more to him. And I went back into town. I got the abatement notice. I left it in the office there. I took him right back out and nailed it up on the place. And this fellow, he was working over on the other side of the carpenter. He heard me nailing it up over there. He came around. He says, what's going on here? Well, I says, read this now. And he read it. He just packed up his tools and quit. So, now maybe you know where this was. Let's see, they call it
the old Richardson.
Rainbow
Club on the old Richardson.
Rainbow
Pauline
Club.
Used to have it. Pauline.
It's on the old Richardson.
Near 6 Mile.
Yes, I know what you mean. Yeah, I know that. I've seen those. I've never been down that street, down that road, but I've seen it.
Well, that's
where all
was.
Those buildings are. Down by the railroad track, and the government surplus is over there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just the other side.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is it.
That's sort of the Fairbanks line today, I guess.
So thank you.
No, I don't think I've been out there for years.
So that's what that turned out. And they kept that abatement notice on there for, supposed to be on there for a year, and finally she came in and talked to the district attorney out, and he took it out in 6 months. So she opened up then. But she ran a pretty good, decent place after that.
Now, what constitutes a decent place as against a place that is not decent? In the trade, speaking of the trade.
Well, it depends on how many offenses are committed and how many complaints you receive against them. Now, you know, the bars on 2nd Avenue,
yes.
Some of them have been questionable. When which one bar was it that the gentleman was... Scott Bowen?
No,
that wasn't in there.
Stone, yes.
Well, if there's too much of that goes on, that would be reason to close it.
Well, I seen one place out on South Cushman, the Yukon Bar is what they called it. It had sawdust floors, and a lot of the natives used to go there. I went in there and see them laying down, sleeping right in that sawdust. Oh, maybe half a dozen. And I was with the marshal's office at that time, so
we decided to go out there and clean that out. We went out there with two cars and we loaded up both cars, chucker block, just hauling all. They were so drunk some of them couldn't walk.
Violations, if you get too many violations, you're supposed to do something.
Yes, uh-huh. If they don't turn them, if the bartenders don't stop them from
Well, yeah, that's up to
point,
the bartender. And
that's part of it.
And we arrested the bartender, too,
uh-huh,
for letting that happen.
You have to be reasonably decent about these things.
Yes. Sure. How about, did you get into any real scandalous murders or shootings or whatever?
Oh, yeah, we got into a lot of murder trials.
Murder trial, but you were never present when a murder was committed, were you?
No.
No. You had some, they had investigations, but you remember Cecil Wells here when he was killed?
Oh, yes. Sure.
Ted was your deputy then. Mm-hmm. Never have found out who committed that murder.
And, of course, there was the element of organized crime beginning to come in during your period, too.
Definitely then, post-war.
Yes.
A big post-war influx of undesirable citizens. They weren't all colored people, either. There was plenty of white people.
Oh, yes. One thing, I think law enforcement is something that that you learn not to talk about your work too much.
You do learn.
There's an element of danger.
Yeah.
The threat
that's
is
right.
out to go
yeah,
far.
Yeah,
you
shouldn't.
That's exactly right.
You know, just that 3 or 4 months that I worked for the newspaper, I just learned right now to keep my mouth shut.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked like I didn't know a thing about nothing.
That would be very valuable.
Somebody told me not long after that, they didn't stop me on the street. It was somebody I met in, I think in one of the courthouses that I was just passing the time of day with chatting. And then he let me know in a very nice way that it was not presented as a warning, but yet it could have been that, well, you know, that crime in the North, just like anywhere else,
mm-hmm,
is pretty well organized.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody that gets into where they will know anything goes into a little book, and your name is in a little book.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's watching you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that kind of spooked me.
I think that's what you came up to the office to see about some something of that type. I don't remember whether it was a murder or whatever it was. It was a real hot story, whatever it was.
Yes,
and
that's right. Oh, I was going to interview the FBI about it. The FBI had gotten involved with something. It was a federal case.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why
I can just see it so clearly, and you did talk to the marshal,
mm-hmm,
and after, I just can't remember what it was.
I don't remember exactly, because I was in there a few other times, too, but you know, one thing that did tickle me was that it wasn't the Scott Stone murder, but it was an incident involving one of his buddies that was shot. The shooting of a man, this was, 70? Yeah, 3 or 4 years ago. I think it was Scott Stone that had a minor operation, and so there was a party up at his apartment following to celebrate his little operation. And then as the people were leaving, this was from the Pioneer Apartments and went down onto the main street, somebody was shot on the main street. There was a killing on the main street. And so there were several arrests made, and I went to cover the inquest. Yes, it was the inquest.
Mm-hmm.
No, this wasn't the inquest. This was where they're charged in preliminary hearing.
Oh, preliminary hearing.
It wasn't the full trial, but they were investigating. Must have been it was the inquest. It was the inquest because it was conducted just like a trial, and yet it was
the
investigation.
Yeah.
But I had to cover that, and there were 2 or 3 people that were definitely suspected. One in particular, the people said to me, "Oh, everybody knows he did it."
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how in the world everybody knew he did it, but I mean, I'm not too. I'm not too informed on these subjects. I had not had exposure in depth, and I didn't know the underworld.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently these guys at the newspaper,
uh-huh,
they were in the bars, and they knew this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, this kid, one kid was close. So knowing that word was out that he was everyone, everybody knew, I was careful in the reporting of it,
mm-hmm,
accurate, and frankly, I was a little scared, because I didn't know what they kind of revenge they would take, but this fellow had a girlfriend. So they were out in the waiting room at one point, and I stopped in and visited with them for a little bit, and this fellow's girlfriend came over to me, and she said, "We really want to thank you. You're the only reporter in the years that my boyfriend has been in and out of these scandals and what have you," she implied. I said, "You're the only reporter that has ever been honest and accurate." And I thought, you know, the way I just gave the dialogue verbatim in the newspaper, and it was very incriminating, really. He was acting so evasive that his evasiveness was incriminating.
But you probably didn't try to editorialize.
But I did not editorialize. I just gave it verbatim, and they respected the honesty of it.
I think we all respect the honesty of the reporting, and for heaven's sake, cut out this editorializing of it.
Yes, yes. But that was scary work.
And well, wasn't Scott Bowen Scott Bowen used to be governor of Alaska, you know, years ago. And anyway, I keep thinking of him every time I hear the name Scott. But wasn't his car wired and he lost a limb?
It was an attempt to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so he was in the hospital for a long time. Then he got out, went to the university, and rethought his life.
I was surprised at that.
Now, this we're talking about the milepost. Bill Wallace?
Yeah.
And he started the milepost, but the milepost developed because he was working for you in the...
Well, he didn't start the development until afterwards. But he had it in his mind to do this, you see.
He was working on the fire control.
Yeah, he was working on the fire control. And he made this here map for the fire control there.
I see. It looks like the old milepost map.
But he had it copyrighted, and Boston Anchorage, the chief forester, he got after him about it. And, well, he says, I'm going to make some money out of it. So he says, this piddling job, he says, I don't want it anymore. So he went to making up the milepost. And,
I see.
And
he sold it now.
Some 36 or 8 trips up and down over the highway during the time that he worked on the milepost.
This was really a nice thing for a group to have, that like
oh, yes.
Fire control and
the fog nozzle.
Made them, well, morale deal. You know.
Oh, I think that's a fascinating little paper for the 40s. That Ranger Ted Lowell came into the Central Ranger Station the other evening with his tongue hanging and his stern dragging. When asked the cause of his fatigue, he gasped off the following story. Reached for a swallow of water, collapsed. I ran into Tony Zimmerman's wife down the road. Stranded with a flat and no tools, so I loaned her my jack and wheel wrench and drove on. What happened? It seems he'd gone several miles when one of his own tires died.
That's what happened.
Didn't have the jack or the tools to repair it with.
Wow. She said, I thought my tires were good, you see.
That's so interesting stories.
Oh, yes,
I
remember.
Good
stories.
Yeah.
So
you
have, what, how many
cubs?
Eight cubs.
Yeah.
What happened was it, though?
Well, this little...
I just
said that they better start bringing cubs to their fire control station because you're getting more than you can take care of.
What happened was at Ladd Field, which is Fort Wayne right now, the GIs caught him. And they had all these cubs out there and game warden, he got wise to them and went out and picked them all up, you see. So he brought them in, he had them all in his office downtown, which wasn't like close to our office. So I said to this game warden, what are you going to do with them? Well, he said, I don't know what to do with them. He says, I guess I'll have to, they can't take care of themselves. He says, I guess I'll have to put them to sleep. Well, I said, don't do that. I said, won't you let me take them over to the ranger station and take care of them over there? And he said, yeah. So I took them over there. And about that time, the war was getting pretty hot, and the military police moved in part of our barracks here at the ranger station. And they had lots of... grub, you know, and a lot of scraps and whatnot, and I'd bought a case or two of milk for these little cubs. So we put ropes on them, chains, and had them all tied around there, and they got along real good. And after a while, they got big. I'd turn them loose, and they'd go out in the woods and dig out ants and rip up logs, but they always come back at night. Stayed there at the radio station, and so there was one little grizzly in the outfit, and he was mean, awful mean. So I had a harness on him, and by golly, he got out of that harness, and he took off by himself. And where he wound up was out at the university. What is that there woman's name?
Olride.
Olride.
Yes.
In her chicken yard. He was a professor or something there at the university, this Olride was. So she called me. And she says, of course, everybody in the country knew we had these bears. She called me and she says, there's a bear in my chicken yard out here. And, I said, I'll come right out. So I went out there. By the time I got out there, there was two GIs come walking along, and she told the GIs about him, this bear. So they went in to catch the bear. He went up a tree, and the GIs got the bear out of the tree. And by the time I got there, they were walking down the road with this bear by the neck, you know.
And they had him.
They got him, so I took the bear away from the GIs. and throw them in the truck and brought them back and tied them up. He didn't kill any chickens, but I guess he would have. But anyway, after these bears got large enough so they could fend for themselves, you know, and I put them in a boat, and I took them down the Chena and dumped them off over on the other side of the Tanana. And I never seen them anymore until in the fall of the year. And here come one back. He was a great big fellow. Come right back to the ranger station. We had the ranger station there in the railroad yard then. And he come back there, and I was in a warehouse, and I just went to walk out the door, and by golly, he was right there looking at me. And it's one of them that used to always climb up on me, and I'd hold a pan up here and drink milk out of it. See, and, well, I took one good look at him, and I backed into the warehouse, and I grabbed the first thing I could get a hold of there, which was an axe. And I went out, but he'd walked along the side of the warehouse, and he went over towards the Chena River, and there was some guy coming up the river with a boat, and he seen a bear, and he shot and killed him.
Oh, no.
So the minute I seen what happened, I got on the phone and called the game warden. And he come over and grabbed the guy and the bear, and he took his gun away from him, the bear away from him, and he says, I have no reason to take your boat, too, but he placed him under arrest. Cost the guy $50 and his gun, and
the guy probably didn't realize that he was shooting a tame bear.
Well, he didn't have any license.
Yeah?
And but the bear was, he remembered that place, and he'd probably swam the river and come back there.
Isn't
come back out there about 10 miles at least.
Yes?
Yeah.
Let me see if this is empty. Yeah, it looks like it's running better now. No, it's still wobbling. That thing is still wobbling. I don't know.
The reel isn't warped, is it?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. This isn't warped. Well, we'll try it. Now, it looks like the speed is running normally now. Before, yeah. Before, this reel was racing. And I kept looking at the speed of the reel. It looks strange to me.
But it looks odd to me now.
This button here may have gotten...
Not the
Now it's pushing up speed.
Picking up.
Before, on that last reel, when I ran out of tape, what was it? Do you remember what it was when I went out to get the tape and started to tell me it's
I was going to tell you about the bear.
The bear.
I think.
Bear story.
Was that the bear story at that time?
He just got through telling me something. Oh, no. When you went to get another reel, you were talking about Bill Wallace, wasn't you, Tim? Well, so? Yeah, I don't remember where you left off.
I don't remember either. That was said.
Was a school teacher.
Stanley Nichols, yeah, from mm-hmm. August of 46 to December of 50, four years. Mm-hmm. His wife was a school teacher?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're talking about
Marshalls, when Mr. Little worked for the Marshalls office.
Yeah. He left I'll have to give you an answer.
Didn't you leave in 60?
50.
No, 59 he left.
Yeah. What, now who was Stan Nichols? Where did he come from? Or what did he do while he was...
He was in the trading business down at Ruby before he became Marshall.
Wasn't he in Galena too?
Yeah, he was at Ruby and Galena.
Very fine person to work for.
And just where he come from, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Before he... That's the first I heard of him.
It's really about as much as we know.
Actually, it's kind of hard to say much about these people.
Yeah. I think maybe if you can get a hold of Roberts, he'd be a good source because he lived down in that country quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He was in the Bethel area, and he was near McGrath, Tecotma.
Did you get over to that country at all?
Yes. I used to get to their fur barn, and I got down in there when I was deputy, too, at McGrath and Bethel.
What law problems would take you over there?
Well, there'd be numerous problems. One in particular was a military policeman bootlegging out of McGrath, or Tecotma. And I had to go down and pick him up and his girlfriend and turn him over to the military. I guess they put him to peanut spuds or something. But anyway, I had to break that up, and then I went into Bethel. Bay was along at that time, and to get an insane woman. She was part Native, wasn't she?
She was Native.
All Native.
I think so. Mm-hmm.
She was that far insane that we had to strap her to a stretcher.
Very violent.
Bring her all the way in on the stretcher.
I think your training days at Healy are some of the most interesting period.
Mm-hmm. That was real living.
You really enjoyed that.
And the mining, 2 years of prospecting and mining we did.
You didn't tell me about that.
Well, I started in to tell you about that, but I got way ahead of my story. Mm-hmm. That was in 1947-48, wasn't it?
If we had been on our toes, we would have started and finished with one segment of the tizzy.
Well, that's all right.
We went into the 40 mile on the North Fork of the 40 mile. It was three of us. We bought a $10,000 outfit that included a tractor and go in there and prospect with. So we found a little pay there, and we made some sluice boxes and set up a little mining venture. And during the 2 years that we had prospected in there, we took out a neighborhood of $10,000 or something in that neighborhood. $10,000, but that wasn't enough for us, so the other two partners, they wanted to go back and go to work for wages, and I didn't care much. So we had a chance to sell the outfit over there to another miner and get most of our money back out of it. And that's what we did. So we all pulled up. And I come into Fairbanks, and that's when I bought the Crystal Water Service and started in the water business. And that lasted for a year, and I sold that. Then, where did I go then?
Well, you built this house, for one thing.
Tell me about your prospecting. Did you buy a claim that was already located, or did you go in and actually prospect?
We did buy a couple of claims there.
They took a lease on it, didn't they?
No, we bought them outright, remember? Bought the rights, anyway.
Yeah.
From Mrs. Hyde at Indiana.
She was U.S. Commissioner.
She's the one that kept her records in her outhouse. I believe so, yes. In one of my mining experiences. We had to go down to Nenana. And she had these old records. We had to look up something from way back. She said, well, just a minute, they're stored out here, and here's a half moon on the door, and she had to rummage it.
Well, that was really good. You could tell a lot about that, Ted, if you was...
Oh, if I went into little details, it'd be... Yeah, it wasn't quite a...
We were completely isolated. They built a landing strip. We had a little airplane. And what's his name? I can't remember the name of the pilot that flew it in for us. And brought supplies once in a while.
You know, I think the battery's gone out.
Well,
it's not doing a thing. I'm not getting any recording at all.
I think your battery's
gone out. You think my battery's gone out? I'm afraid. Well, I got a little sound. I'm afraid that might.
does travel faster than that normally?
No, but there's nothing coming out of the water. There's no, nothing is showing.
These are quite a drain on batteries.
Well, I see when you tap it like that, it comes in and comes out.
Does it?
Now, testing, testing. Now, she's just, the mic is good.
Testing, 1, 2, 3, testing. No, see, the power is way low.
Yeah. Now, what's happening? No, now I'm not getting any volume again. I believe it's going to work. Tell me a story. Talk on your side. See what happens.
Yeah, let's see what I'm going to tell you now.
That's party round.
Well, you were telling that. You go ahead. About the airplane.